I'm Danica Juarez.
And I'm Jan James.
And this is
How's It Hold Up?
Hi, I'm Danica.
And I'm Jan.
And I'm Valerie.
And today, we watched a 1936 Looney Tunes short, The Blowout, directed by Tex Avery, animated by Bob Clampett, uncredited, and Chuck Jones. Who would like to give a spoiler-free plot synopsis? I'll do it. So there's a bomber going around just bombing different places because they're a sicko, you know.
Weirdo.
But also we have our hero, Porky, who seems to basically be a kid in this and just wants to get, is it a milkshake?
Yeah. It's an ice cream soda.
Ice cream soda. Who just wants to get an ice cream soda. The problem is he only has 5 pennies and they cost 10 pennies because this is from 1936. So... he's all sad about it, but when he goes outside to sulk, someone drops a cane near him, and he, you know, is a nice kid, so he hands it back to them, and then he gets a penny for his efforts. So he starts to hatchet a plan over here, and he starts speed running towards anyone who drops anything ever so that he can hand their item back to them. You start to see maybe in your brain how these two things are going to connect. And you're right. The bomber lands a time bomb in front of a building. Porky sees that and is like, oh, this person dropped their item. I need to give it back to them. And so the bulk of the cartoon is a chase where Porky is chasing after this bomber trying to return the item that the bomber very much does not want to have because it's going to explode. And that's basically the short. Yeah. What did we think of it?
And Porky was so cute. Oh my gosh, Porky was so cute. It was cute and fun. I enjoyed it from start to finish.
I enjoyed it overall. The comedy of it is straightforward, but well executed. It was very funny. It was snappy. The bomber's voice actress was... I'm like, are you just like an evil witch or something?
Yeah.
So that was just a funny incongruency between the character design of this dude and then the voice. It sounds like an evil witch.
Yeah, it's good. This is... finally, a funny Looney Tunes cartoon that doesn't also have a really horrific racial stereotype in it. It does have a racial stereotype, but not a really horrific racial stereotype. So it's the first one that's like really kind of enjoyable on its own merits. And that's nice. Let's get specific. So, this short marks the first use of the premise of a person tracking someone and always waiting for that person wherever he turns up, which would later be expanded and exaggerated by director Tex Avery in the Bugs Bunny and Cecil Turtle short Tortoise Beats Hare 5 years later, as well as the droopy cartoon Dumbhounded over at rival studio MGM 7 years later. The premise would also be exaggerated by Bob Clampett in the Daffy Duck short Drafty Daffy 9 years later. Coincidentally, Clampett worked on as an animator on this short. And then it's become sort of such a ubiquitous cartoon thing that in the 90s, the Animaniacs, that's just kind of part of their deal, is they can just instantly be anywhere anyone goes. You can't escape them if you try to escape them, you know? And it's thanks to this cartoon that sort of cartoon language started, you know? Which in some ways could maybe make this feel a little antiquated, but I think it pulls it off well.
No, I agree. Yeah, it doesn't know it's trite, so it does a little bit of work, but also doesn't in terms of like how Porky gets in the places that seems unlikely.
I think what it does well is build it up. So at first you see him run and then suddenly he'll start being there and it just becomes more and more he's wherever he needs to be.
Yeah, and you see him, I like when you see him waiting in some instances and the guy's like putting stuff on top of a manhole and Porky's just behind him.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'll let you finish.
It's like, and whenever you're done, if you could take this and let you know if you want to give me a little reward.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, let's talk about the story characters and stuff too, because we'll talk about animation too, because it's so essential to it. But I love the animation on Porky, especially once he realizes, oh, if I do nice things, then I get a reward, is like, the way that he kind of bashfully looks to the side and like holds his hand out is so characterful of like a child who's figured out, like, a cheat code to get money, basically. And it's, like, doing a nice thing, but also overtly for a selfish reason. But he's also a child, so it's kind of cute. It's just, it's funny, and it's portrayed really well with his poses and stuff.
His emotions, the way he conveyed them, just from the beginning, when he was looking longingly inside and so sad, you know, watching the ice cream soda be consumed, and then watching the empty soda glass. And then we just didn't understand why the man, he came in and, you know, he had 5 pennies, why the man didn't give him half, you know, half of a soda.
Because he tries to give, he's like, a soda, and he's like, sorry, you only have half of what you need, and he's sad, and he starts to walk away. Then he has an idea, and he comes back, he's like, half a soda? But no.
Yeah.
No halfsies here.
Well, we think he deserved a half a soda just for that.
Agreed.
So cute. So cute. And even the way that he protruded his little tummy kind of and leaned back to walk in, just the, oh, he was
a lot of personality.
Cute. I know, he's so cute.
Yeah, he like tiptoed up because the counter was a little too high for him to like show him the money.
Yeah.
I think this is easily in, especially what we've seen, but I've seen the others, so I can still attest to this. I think this is easily the most charming Porky has been up to this point. I think the main other times for the podcast that we've seen him was his debut, when he was alongside a bunch of other children. And, like, he was cute, but not necessarily any more cute than anyone else.
Right. I think the one with that one is the joke was his stutter.
Yes, and that was the main joke.
That wasn't his joke.
No, really, his stuttering is used as a joke pretty much just at the end. And even then, it's not, just to lead into, it's like he's stuttering and can't get out what he's going to use the prize money for, but then it just transitions to showing you what he's using it for, right. Which is, yeah.
That's not the source of comedy.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other main one that we saw him in, he was an adult and had the kind of deeper voice and was a side character in the cartoon still. Mm-hmm. This is his first kind of time actually having the starring role. Beans is not here because who cares about Beans?
Yeah.
This is sort of the start of the meteoric rise of Porky, who would go on to be the premier Looney Tunes star for the rest of the decade, until finally in the 40s being replaced by some even bigger names. But so yeah, we're going to be seeing more of him, is I guess what I'm saying. This is not the end of old Porky.
He was, again, so, so cute. The bad guy, or the bomber.
The bomber.
The bomber. Yeah. The bomber was, well, one is, the bomber was so interesting because it had a rich looking, gosh, I love how it almost looked like a velvet cape.
Yeah.
But it moved fluidly, almost like mercury or water, or, you know, or more like, I guess, mercury, you know, just that kind of folding. And so at the very beginning, when you first see the bomber plant the bomb, it was just like this, almost like shadow, but it was, again, almost that rich velvety looking, you know, blackness of the cape that would kind of swirl, and you could kind of tell it was a person, but it was so interesting the way they did that fluidly behind this column, and part of it would swish out. Well, then when you actually got to see him, again, just a very, very creepy, evil looking, and especially they made the arms and the hands almost, again, witch-like, and then that voice, it was a very much like a witch, like a wicked witch, the laugh and everything, but yet it's this very...
You guys keep mentioning the voice, so I want to tell you that the bomber's voice by Martha Wentworth, who did a whole lot of voice acting in this era, but who you guys will most immediately recognize is from a couple decades after this, which is that she voiced Madame Mim.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. Yep. Okay. All right. That tracks. Well, the disconnect also for me with the voice and the man, because it was almost a generic looking, you know, a man with a scruffy beard and that, I don't know, I just feel like I've seen that face a lot before, but they would make with his expressions and with that laugh and everything just so creepy, and the way he moved. And then he put on that cape that, again, was that mercury velvet textured, you know.
It's the scary bomber guy.
It is. And then it was great because once you had Porky interacting with the bomber, oh, it was just priceless. You know, the bomber was going everywhere to elude Porky. And we even talked about they did this great thing where eventually the bomber ended up in a manhole and you would just see his eye, you know, the bomber's eyes. But then you would see Porky's eyes and the face of the clock or the bomb.
All the little numbers were shining.
Lit up. And, oh, it was just hilarious. It was just hysterical. And, of course, the bomber would continuously try to barricade himself in somewhere and then discover that Porky was there with him and then try to quickly get out of that, which, you know, culminated of him running inside a police wagon. And then it was great because I was hoping, because, you know, the whole time, too, is you're also like, this is great, except Porky is holding this bomb that we've seen does a lot of damage. And so it was great because through the back window slats, you know, Porky then just kind of plinked the bomb in and then slyly did that little kind of pose, kind of hoping to get a reward. And of course, the bomb did go off, but it was away from Porky.
Right. And he did get a reward.
Yes, he did.
For capturing this bomber, he got $2,000, which is a lot of money in that
especially at that time.
Yes,
yeah. And he spent it all on the sodas.
Yes.
At one time.
Yes. Good for him.
Truly.
Oh, we've got to say, too, is leading towards the end, why they accredited Porky for capturing the bomber is you see the police, of course, pursuing the bomber, but Porky ended up being on the back of this cloak that the bomber was wearing and grabbed on and was just being almost like someone on skis or on a sled. You know, they just were going all over the place and he's just hanging on because, you know, Porky wanted that penny for to get that soda and just wouldn't let go of the bomber. It was great.
And, you know, early in the cartoon after Porky initially started to get the pickup stuff, Porky saw a nickel on the ground, which would have been enough for him to get a cream soda and probably stop doing this. But somebody from down the way saw him seeing a nickel, ran and picked up the nickel first and tipped his hat and went on his way.
So rude. So, away from a little child.
Yes, but if it weren't for that guy, then the bomber wouldn't be caught. So
you know, it all worked out.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the music in this cartoon? It was done by Bernard Brown and Norman Spencer.
Well, I don't know about the music, but whenever...
Sound effects, too.
Yeah, whenever Porky picked up a thing and got a coin, he would, like, fling it into his pocket, quote-unquote. Yeah, it was just the SpongeBob noise a couple times in there. I thought that was interesting.
Maybe the SpongeBob noise is a reference to this, or they're both probably quoting the same music piece. Is my guess.
No, I'm
it's
curious.
probably a nautical thing more than anything if SpongeBob is using it, but who knows, we're so warped by SpongeBob
that... fully yes we're SpongeBob brain now.
yeah
but that's the thing that stood out to me the most, obviously.
I think there was some good I especially like the couple of, I think twice it was used when the bomber was desperately running away. There was kind of this more like intense music, the da-da-da, as he's like desperately trying to escape, that I think worked really well. We're not quite to the point where we have the most iconic of Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies composers here yet, but I think... Bernard and Norman are doing a great job here.
Yeah, I think that the music and the sound effects really integrated well with all the, you know, the action.
Let's go on to the part that our podcast is named after. How's it hold up? So there's a racial stereotype in this cartoon that holds up so poorly that we don't even really recognize it anymore, which is to say the guy who takes that coin is a Scotsman because there was a negative stereotype at the time of cheap Scotsmen.
Dang.
Oh, goodness.
That's what that is.
Yeah, he was like a Scottish dog.
Yeah.
Scottish terrier.
Exactly. And that's not really, and his dress made it even more apparent that he was Scottish. That's not really like a stereotype that most of us like think about or aware of anymore. So it holds up so badly that we don't even recognize it as bad.
Yeah.
But yes, that is them being racist. It's just more palatable than the ones in the Gold Diggers cartoon because it's not as immediately obvious to us.
Yeah. Well, you know, a shame that they had to stick something in there because you know. I was kind of proud of them. When we were saying, how's it hold up? I was thinking, well, I didn't really see anything objectionable.
I don't think... No, there were other animals in the cartoon. So it was like people and animals.
Yeah.
Because one of the... he picked up a bag for like a cow lady.
And so, I think the police guys, they look like dogs. At least one of them.
But in the background, whenever the police drove away, there were people in the background. And they weren't all animals, if not any. It's interesting because it didn't have to be. Like, it was still funny. We didn't recognize it, but it was still funny that a guy just takes the coin.
Right. But no, they had to make it a jab at a particular race of people, basically. Other than that, I think it holds up pretty well. You know, it's in black and white, and more than that, because, you know, there can be great stuff in black and white. More than that, it's just, like, kind of the start of a particular cartoon trope, so it doesn't take the concept as far and make it quite as funny as later stuff would. It's not one of those comedy things where you go back and it just completely falls flat because you've seen it a million times. Like, it is still doing it well and it is still funny. I think this is the one that I've shown you guys that there's been the most just laugh out loud, especially from Mom over here as it was going on, just like genuinely having a good time laughing at this silly thing. So that speaks a lot to its quality still.
Yeah, as the progenitor of something, it was still pretty solid as the first go around.
I mean, the tenacity and just the perseverance of Porky was so adorable. And again, because they made his little character so endearing and just so darn cute.
Let's go on then to our favorites and least favorites. What was your least favorite scene?
I think some of the beginning part, so... The structure of the cartoon was introducing the bomber first, and then after some intro of him placing a bomb, blowing it up, newspapers, and then like cops going around looking for him. I think that was a little slow. There was especially one scene with the cops driving around that was just recycled 3 or 4 times of a car driving and a car coming. So I would say some of that beginning part being a bit slow is my least favorite.
I'm going to agree because I was initially going to say when the bomber was putting together one of the bombs. Yeah, there's too much he was shoving in there that wouldn't. But there was interesting stuff and then him putting on his cape. So I think I'm going to go with yours, the setup and again with the cars and that recycled, animation.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and go with the same thing. The beginning's just a little slow. What was your favorite scene in the short?
That's going to be hard. I think for me, it's almost a toss-up between the bomber being down in the manhole with little Porky's eyes. But then also when you first see after that, when Porky is hanging on to the cloak and almost like, you know, sledding and skiing on the back of him all around town. Well, oh, gosh. It was just so funny.
I think for me... It's the first time that music, that desperate music hits when Porky tries to give him it. And then there's kind of the wide shot of them going back and forth between buildings, almost like a Scooby-Doo door setup of them just going back and forth the city as this music is playing. And the desperation of the music adds a comedic quality for me that makes it transcend even the visuals. I just like that bit. I'm like, oh, this bummer desperately wants to get away from this thing that they know exactly how dangerous this is.
I think I will go with the bomber in the sewers with the eyes, and then when he goes to one side, there's Porky's eyes, but then also the clock face. I really liked how the clock face looked in all of that.
Yeah.
So I'll
thank
go
you
that
for
scene.
Choosing that.
Yeah.
Who was your least favorite character? I will go with the stereotype, even if it's one we can't really even recognize anymore.
Sure. Yeah, I'll agree.
He was awfully cute, but yes, knowing now that he's a stereotype, I agree.
Who was your favorite character? Porky. Porky's so funny in this.
Oh.
He's just a cute little guy.
Really
he's
endearing.
He's a little bit of a scamp, but like you're rooting for him.
Yeah, not dislikable.
Not at all.
You know, took something from somebody.
Like, he does want money, but he's also helping people.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's, Yeah.
And initially he just, you know that he has a good little character because he just, without any thought of reward, you know, helps someone, you know, and then I'm not going to fault him for wanting an ice cream soda and finding out that people are going to reward his niceness. You know, hey, that was enterprising.
It's such a like, yes, you can see how a kid would grasp onto this logic. It's very cute. Let's go on to our overall consensus and what we would rate it.
Yeah, this was a really enjoyable short. Another thing that I liked in the beginning had a very interesting kind of aerial shot of the building that the bomber was blowing up. So it's fun visual stuff that they were trying. Good characters that you can kind of immediately get but enjoy. Yeah, I wouldn't mind watching this one again. I would recommend it, and I'll give it a 3.75.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I was definitely thinking 3.5 or above. So yes, I'm going to agree. I would absolutely recommend it. I very much enjoyed myself, as Danica alluded to. Pretty much laughed from start to finish. And I would also give it a 3.75.
I will give it a 4 because I'm honestly really a fan of the sort of comedy that this one's kind of starting. Like, I love the later Droopy Dog stuff. I love Animaniacs. I love the cartoon characters that can just warp space and time to be in front of you no matter what you do.
Aww.
So, yeah.
Oh, well, you know. Okay, I almost want to jump ship.
Yeah, hey, up to you.
I may jump ship. I'm going to jump ship and I'm going to also agree with the 4.
Thank you all very much for listening.
Yes, thank you.
Next time, we will be watching a short from another company. We're going to go back to Happy Harmonies that's being made by MGM or being contracted by MGM. And if you guys recall, the last time we watched a Happy Harmony, it was a Color Bosco cartoon.
And I don't know what...
Bosco, you know, who used to be Looney Tunes. I'm happy to inform you that this is not a Bosco cartoon.
All right.
And it also features the debut director that we haven't seen so far yet, who will go on to do even greater things. So look forward to that.
Okay. All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
This has been How's It Hold Up with Danica Juarez and Jan James. You can find our podcast on Twitter at How's It Hold Up Pod. That's with each word capitalized and no apostrophe. Also, if you'd like to support us, we have a Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/user?u=2790566. Every little bit helps, and even with a minimum pledge, you get access to things you won't hear in our main podcast feed. Check it out for more info. The two pieces of music used in this episode were created by Kevin MacLeod. You can find both The Curtain Rises and Cool Cats at incomptech.com. That's incomptech.com. Both songs were licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. More info on that can be found at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0. Thanks for listening!